Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the Foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website, foundation@hearstcastle.com, to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.
Pretty Polly, Pretty Polly, would you think it unkind?
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Birthplace of Country Music Museum in Bristol, Virginia. Come along and join me for a conversation with Dr. Renee Rogers, head curator, and Leah Ross, executive director. We'll then visit with Chris Trulson, WBCM Radio Bristol's program manager, located in the Birthplace of Country Music Museum. Trulson is also host of the PBS television show Farm and Fun Time. We'll then meet up with Matt Bolas, executive director with Explore Bristol. And last, by no means least, a visit with Joe Deal, the owner of Bristol's legendary Burger Bar. The last place music legend, 29-year-old Hank Williams, was seen alive before his tragic death in Oak Hills, West Virginia, January 1st, 1953.
And go along with me. Come on, Pretty Polly, and go along with me before we get married. Some pleasure.
My name is Renee Rogers. We're here at the Birthplace of Country Music Museum in Bristol, Tennessee, Virginia, and I'm the head curator.
Let's go back in time, because there's a reason why the Birthplace is here.
Yes, so we celebrate the 1927 Bristol Sessions. Those are some important recording sessions in early country music. They happened here in July and August of 1927 with the Victor Talking Machine Company.
Really was a perfect convergence of time, place, technology, that it all converged here.
Definitely. You know, there was a change in technology a year or so before the 1927 Bristol Sessions, from the acoustic horn recording to electric microphone recording, and that changed the way those records sounded, you know, more vibrant, more nuanced sound, more balanced, and of course, better sounding records sell better. There was also this amazing convergence of people. So, for instance, the producer of the Victor Talking Machine Company, who is here, Ralph Peer, he has been so influential in the way that the music industry as a whole. Ralph Peer changed the way that copyright was being used, so he, at the time, decided to take a smaller salary from Victor and wanted to publish through his own music publishing company to do the copyright. So he did the copyright of the performance, the copyright of the song where possible, and he also managed some of the artists that came out of those sessions and other sessions that he worked with.
Talk to us about that legacy of copyright, because what he created and instituted is around today, as is the family. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so just that way of treating those different areas of copyright within a performance and within a recording is very foundational to how the music industry works today. Obviously, it's much more complicated now, but that was the foundation of that. And, you know, at the time, the record company was paying those artists $50 a side, so a side of the record, and then they would get royalties for the records being sold.
Quite a lot of money back then.
It was a lot of money. You know, if you go to Google, you can look what that is in today's terms, and it was, for someone in 1927, so think of that, 2 years before the Great Depression, that was a very good pay. And Ernest Stoneman, that's how they convinced people to come out, is that they did a newspaper article where someone interviewed Ernest Stoneman, who was the artist who had already worked with Ralph Peer before this and recommended to Ralph Peer that he come to Bristol in the first place. And he told them how much money he had made in royalties the previous year. And it was like $3,400, I think. And an artist in rural America, That's a pretty big deal.
Buy a house for $4,000.
Yeah. And then, you know, you mentioned the legacy of the Peer family. So, you know, Ralph Peer started his Southern Music Publishing Company in 1927, 28, and that company is now known as Peer Music. It's been run by his son, Ralph Peer II. It's now got his granddaughter running it.
They have some major label artists, right?
They do. You know, they are the largest independent music publishing company in the world, and they have copyrights with people like Katy Perry and John Legend. But also what's cool about Ralph Peer is that, you know, he's really important in hillbilly music, but he was also really important in race records. That was the name of the genre for music made by African-American artists for an African-American audience.
Roll back for a moment the genesis and etiology of hillbilly. That's fascinating.
You know, for those of us who listen to music and for those of us who play music, genre is not strict boundaries. It's very fluid. But for marketers, they like those boundaries. And so, of course, when the recording industry started to become a big deal and a big business, marketing of genres became really a big part of that. And with the hillbilly genre, that's what we call early country music, old-time traditional music. The story behind the name is that Ralph Peer recorded a group, and I think it was in 1924. And after he recorded the songs by them, he wanted to write down the name of their band. And he said, "What do I call you all?" And they said, "You can call us whatever you like. We're just a bunch of hillbillies from Virginia and North Carolina." And so he wrote down the hillbillies. And from that, supposedly, the hillbilly genre term came.
Talk for a moment about race records, because that really, again, pioneering, cutting edge.
Yeah, so race records, you know, a lot of that is the blues and the country blues that we're familiar with from that period. But again, those artists were influencing hillbilly artists and vice versa. They were sometimes, you know, black artists were playing string band music, but they don't tend to get recorded for it, or at least for that type of string band music. But again, it was just this idea that there was this black audience out there that was looking for that kind of music, that blues sound, and therefore it was going to be marketed to them, but they called it race records at that time.
So the Bristol sound, the Bristol sessions and whatnot, it lives on.
It does.
Here we are in the next century.
Yeah, you know, we're celebrating the 95th anniversary of those 1927 Bristol sessions. And, you know, I mentioned Ernest Stoneman earlier, whose family had a legacy in country music way beyond 1927. And then, of course, the Carter family, the first family of country music recorded here for the first time, as did Jimmy Rogers, the father of country music. And when we have artists come here today for Bristol Rhythm and Roots reunion, and just artists who are performing in this area, a lot of them are still being influenced by that history. They still think that history is really important. They're still singing some of those songs. They're still talking about it. And for us, that's amazing because it's an interesting story, even if you're not into country music. You know, the history of it, the change in technology that happened, all of the things that came together to make Bristol so special in 1927 continue to make it special today.
Talk to us a little bit more about the annual Rhythm and Roots Festival.
Yes, so we are in our 21st year. This is a music festival. We close our entire downtown down for it, which is unusual. Most festivals are in fields somewhere, but we are in a working public downtown. So you've got not only all the stages that we have for Rhythm and Root and all of the vendors and all the cool stuff that's going on there. You also have the restaurants and the shops open, and it's just full of people, you know.
And car-free zone.
Car-free zone, yes. Golf carts occasionally. But, you know, it's full of people, and it's grown and grown year after year. There's about 100-plus artists who perform over that three-day period, 10 to 15 stages. This year, our headliners are people like Tanya Tucker and Roseanne Cash. I'm mentioning the women artists because we're in the middle of working on an exhibit about women in old-time music, so I'm really interested in them. But so many wonderful artists who are headlining and who are up-and-coming artists, which is something that's really exciting to us, and local and regional artists. So it's a really diverse sound that you're going to hear. It's not just all country music. There's roots, there's blues, there's Americana, there's some rock even, bluegrass, you'll find it all.
And a moment about you.
So I'm the head curator here at the Birthplace of Country Music Museum. I've been with the BCM since 2012, and I'm a hometown girl. I grew up in Bristol and didn't realize how great it was till I moved back, and now I wouldn't live anywhere else.
You studied in Europe for a while?
I did. I studied at Durham University. I did my master's and my PhD in England, and then I lived there for another 12 to 13 years working for a heritage organization, and then when I moved back here, I hit Bristol just at the right time when the museum was getting off the ground and found my place here.
Somebody wanted to learn more about your world?
So definitely go to our website. It's birthplaceofcountrymusic.org, and you can access the three different aspects of our organization there: the museum, One thing I did mention, we are a Smithsonian-affiliated museum. Our radio station, Radio Bristol, at which you can stream online, and our festival, Bristol Rhythm and Roots Reunion. So you can find out all the information you need there. You can go to our blog to read stories about this history and music, and just there's so much there. And if you're an educator, we even have educational stuff there. And my name is Renee Rogers, and I'm the head curator.
Renee, thank you so much for spending the time. This has been great.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much. We're glad to have you here.
You're welcome. And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the birthplace of American roots music, Bristol, Tennessee, and Bristol, Virginia.
I'm Leah Ross, the Executive Director of the Birthplace of Country Music. We're on the Bristol, Virginia side of the line, and that's where our Birthplace of Country Music Museum is.
Tell us about you and how you came to be involved and what attracted you.
You know, I love coming to work every day. I love the people of our city have been so kind to me.
Talk to us about your connection, your soul connection with the roots music that you grew up with that's here.
You know, I grew up with Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs and all of those. Ralph Stanley, you know, is from here. And at that time, I don't know that I really appreciated.
You didn't really think about it.
Yeah, I didn't think about it because my dad would listen to that old bluegrass, and I was into Steppenwolf at that time. But I loved traditional country. So, and I still love traditional country instead of that. So I've grown to love bluegrass. So that's where I started with that.
Mm-hmm. And how have you evolved, you know, being close to the music genre? What kind of epiphanous growth have you experienced in your love of music?
You know, I think my love of music really goes toward Americana, what they call Americana now, because it can engross so many things from bluegrass, because you look at Yonder Mountain String Band or you know, they're just, I consider them Americana. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm more of Americana. I'm not a hard rock. I'm not so much a today's country, because I think that's more, you know, mainstream. And I like those people that really appreciate the history and still pay homage to it.
It might be a true stereotype, but when I think of Americana music, I think of more rural and country than I do of urban music.
Oh, I think you're very much on it. I don't know if you know who Jim Lauderdale is, but he's from Nashville. I think of him more as rural. He came from North Carolina, but I would agree with you. They want what fills their soul, mm-hmm. not always what sells a ticket.
Exactly, yeah. Definitely music coming from the heart.
Definitely music coming from the heart. And you, if you have those great songwriters out there, you can hear that in those lyrics.
And they all want to be rich and famous. They all want to have a home run. But they're not going to stop playing and singing.
Right. You know, there's more people that don't hit that home run. Mm-hmm. But they are just as much. And I think what people that start out with music, if they really want to do it, they don't understand the journey it's going to take, the sacrifices it's going to take for family, but those that do end up being okay.
Right now, we're in a recording studio of a radio station called Radio Bristol, WBCM 100.1 on the FM dial.
Exactly. You know, when we started curating the museum and the original designs where we're sitting had wax people in here. But when we opened the museum, we said, we can have wax people in here. We need to have a real radio station. And I think anyone that wants to listen to it on the web, Radio Bristol, they can see all the different genres that we celebrate here.
And you have, what, 20, 30 disc jockeys come in throughout the week?
And most of them are local, and they really take pride in their programming. We have a couple that people send them in from Kentucky, etc., but it really is a community radio station.
True.
Yes. Yeah.
And they're almost all volunteers that run the station.
Well, you know, we have the producer and the production person, but yes, they're all, we have just a very few that get paid.
And they do it out of love.
They do it out of love and dedication, being proud of our cultural heritage.
Again, to listen into the station on the web?
Go to Radio Bristol, download the app. You can listen to it driving through your car. If you have Bluetooth, we have three stations. We have our station here where we have a lot of disc jockeys, but we have Americana station. We have a classic station also.
Wow. And all in Bristol?
All in Bristol.
Uh-huh. On what side of the line?
On the Virginia side of the line.
That's where I'm staying, actually.
Yes, you are. I'm staying in the Virginia, too. I've lived on a farm in Tennessee, about 15 minutes from here, since I got married 47 years ago. But I'm from Southwest Virginia, and my mom told me I'd always be a Virginian.
I love it. Okay, a little bit more. Anything you want to add that secrets you're holding back?
You know, what I would say to anyone, if you love music, it doesn't matter what kind of music, you should take a journey to Bristol, Virginia and Bristol, Tennessee, because there's hardly a night that you don't have music down. It's not as commercialized as your big city, and we hear all the time they can't believe how nice our community is. We're here for you.
It's kind of like big town, small town. You get the best of both.
You got it. Yeah. You got it.
To learn more about your world,
you go to thebirthplaceofcountrymusic.org. You can find all about our festival. You can find out about our radio station. You can also find out about our museum. And Tom Wilmer, we're so glad to have you here in Bristol, Virginia today. And I am Leah Ross, the Executive Director of the Birthplace of Country Music.
Leah, thank you so much for spending the time with me. I really appreciate it.
Well, I thank you for making this journey across the country.
3,000 miles, I guess.
It was worth the trip, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, already. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the birthplace of country music, Bristol, Tennessee, and Virginia.
Chris Trulson with Radio Bristol. I'm the program director of the station that's housed here in the Birthplace of Country Music Museum here on the Virginia side.
How did that happen for you, Chris?
Well, I've been kind of here since the beginning. It's been a long road to really building this station.
You have a radio background before?
I didn't. I actually started working for the organization as an intern when I was getting my master's at ETSU.
And what was your master's in?
In Appalachian Studies, and I did a focus on country music history. So it's been in my blood, really researching and digging into the old stories and old folks creating this music. So, you know, as I started writing exhibits for the museum, when the plans for launching the museum came to be in around 2013, we got in some pretty amazing artifacts. A lot of artifacts were donated as plans began developing for the museum. And some of those artifacts were radio related. We got an old console, an old Raytheon console that was donated to us that used to be WCYB's console. It was built in 1946. WCYB is the main television station here in Bristol. And back in the day was like the premier radio station for the Tri-Cities. So that console had just this illustrious history behind it with a lot of country artists who were using that and performing on WCYB through that console.
And you repurposed it and it's running your console now?
Yeah, we did. So that's our main console for Radio Bristol. And we had a fellow in Nashville, Jim Gilmore, refitted it and repurposed it. And it's this beautiful, beautiful thing. That console was used on the original program, Farm and Fun Time, which is a show that we launched here at Radio Bristol, relaunched. So there was this beautiful in sync history with that, with a lot of the programming that we were looking at developing as the museum doors opened. There was a lot of talk about doing a static radio exhibit, but as that console came in and a few of the microphones and booms from the Opry, et cetera, we decided why not make this a real live community station where we can support the arts and support regional voices. And so that job was put on my shoulders early on. And since then, it's really developed, you know, into this beautiful community station. When I look back at kind of where it started from and where it is today, it's really an amazing thing because you don't find stations like ours anywhere. I mean, it's a really, really unique station. I'm incredibly proud of it. So yeah, it's been about 7 years live. It's a low power FM, small little station, but we have online listeners all across the globe. We've got listeners in countless countries who check out a lot of our programs. That was kind of the idea of developing Radio Bristol into this very specific regional platform. I had the intuition that people outside of this region would be very interested in the music that's happening here, and that's definitely has hold true.
Presume it's twofold, that you go back in time and actually play vinyl records and you interview current performers?
Yeah, we do that. We do a lot of historic recordings. The idea and the mission behind the whole thing is connecting historical recordings of the past to contemporary musicians today and how it all goes together.
Give us like one example.
A pretty obvious example to me is Jimmy Rogers, who recorded here in 1927 for the Bristol Sessions with Ralph Peer and Victor. And Jimmy actually just celebrated his 125th birthday yesterday. You know, his music has been incredibly influential over the years to folks like Bob Wills, Merle Haggard, and then fast forward into now, and I think of even, there's so many people like Pokey LaFarge, or if I'm looking locally, there's a fellow Vaden Landers who borrows heavily from Jimmy's material, and I mean, it's exactly that, an artist of his caliber that was groundbreaking back then. His music has aged in an incredible way, and it's still as vibrant as it was 100 years ago.
Literally, almost 100 years ago.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. It's remarkable. And as I said, if you go back and listen to those records from the late 20s, early 30s that Jimmy recorded, connecting to music nowadays is pretty easy to do. And that there aren't that many artists that can do that.
Do you do any live sessions in the studio?
Yeah, we have all sorts of different live bands in all the time. I have a morning daily show. I have bands in usually two or three times a week. JP, who's about to be on air upstairs, he has about two different regional artists in every week. And then, of course, we do a lot of live ticketed programming that we also put out over our airwaves and on our social media. That's been a huge thing for us, is developing programming through video and through our different social media platforms. So I mentioned Farm and Funtime, that's kind of our flagship show. And that show is shot for PBS. We do it here in our theater. We're fortunate enough to have a 100-seat theater here, but we also do it over at the Paramount when we have larger scale shows. So we have two really beautiful venues that serve different purposes, but we utilize both for Radio Bristol programming.
A little deeper on Farm and Funtime, what happens?
Sure. Farm and Funtime was a show that started back in 1946. The Stanley Brothers were one of the first bands that were on it. Flat and Scruggs were on it. Jim and Jesse, Mac Wiseman, all these great first generation country and bluegrass artists really started their career on that show. And that show, as I mentioned, was on WCYB right here in downtown Bristol. And it was just a daily program that had live music, and they would also talk about the weather and sell all sorts of different things on there and that sort of thing. So we wanted to revive that and put a contemporary spin on. So we still do the live music thing. Of course, that's the foundation of the show. We get amazing acts on the program. A couple months ago, we had Rhonda Vincent. We've had the Mavericks. We've had just so many countless great bands over the years.
It's kind of cool how the world comes to you.
It's amazing. That's one of the things with Farm and Funtime and Radio Bristol as a whole, is the idea of building this platform was to try to get people to come to this region, not only to celebrate the artists in the region, but to promote the region and to get people interested to come here. And it's actually proven to work. So that's pretty amazing. But yeah, so Farm and Funtime is a variety show of sorts, and we profile different regional farmers on the program every month. We have various acts. My band, Bill and the Bells, we do a lot of different jingles for our sponsors, kind of in that throwback way. So it really is this cool connector of Tri-Cities history that really feels fresh and new, even though it's right solidly in the foundation of how it was founded.
That's really cool. To learn more about your world,
listenradiobristol.org. You can check us out there. We have an app that you can download to listen to all these different programs. We've got like 25 unique programs to our station, and then also all of our social media, where we do Farm and Funtime live on video on Facebook and YouTube, and put a lot of content on there as well. And my name is Chris Trulson with Radio Bristol.
Chris, thank you very much for spending the time.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Bristol, Tennessee, and Virginia all at one time. We'll see you here.
Pretty Polly, would you think it unkind? Pretty Polly, would you think it unkind? Me to sit down beside you and tell you my mind.
Here we are, Bristol. Virginia side of the road, right?
We are in Bristol, Virginia. You know,
I can see Tennessee.
Yeah, you can. I mean, if you're in downtown Bristol, you can be in two states at one time. It's part of our charm. Our downtown is half Tennessee, half Virginia. So we don't have a main street. We call it State Street. You can stand in two places at once, and one side of the street is all Tennessee, and the other side is all Virginia.
So what do you do here? You work for the city?
My name is Matt Bolus. I'm with Explore Bristol. We're the tourism office.
Are you multinational, covering both sides of the street?
We cover both sides and the region, because when people come to Bristol, they want to explore Northeast Tennessee. They want to explore Southwest Virginia. Our goal is to help get them to have a good time and have a great vacation.
Interesting dynamics, because you have a lot of duplicity in governmental organizations and whatnot. And yet there has to be ways that you guys have worked to find efficiencies.
There are ways. We are unique in that we have two city governments. We have two mayors. We have two city council. We have two city managers. And there's two state offices in Bristol. But when it comes to putting on events or working together, we do streamline. So there are things where the police department, the fire department, they can help each other out. If there was a fire in downtown, both sides would respond. And so if you're going to be criminal, you're not going to be able to do
wrong. Jump across the border.
Yes. Now, that might have happened in the 1800s and the 1850s and 60s, where you could do crime on one side and run across the street. But all of that was eliminated. We have special rules here from the states that allow us to work together. But there are some friendly rivalries. You know, there's two high schools. There's Tennessee High and there's Virginia High.
Well, there must be some incredible football tournaments.
Football, they call that the VT game, where it is a special night and anyone who's anyone will go to that game. But it's part of our charm and nostalgia. There's not many cities like us that are literally split in half.
I can't think of another one.
I mean, not to this degree.
Can you think of another one?
I believe there's out in Memphis, there's Memphis, West Memphis, and there's like Kansas City.
Yeah, but you got to go across bridges on both of them.
You don't have bridges here. You are literally, it's funny when people say, where's Virginia? I'm like, well, you're standing in it. Like, where's Tennessee? And I'm like, you're 2 feet away from it. You're right in the middle of where two states meet. We play off of that. So there's a big sign that has been up since 1910. It says Bristol, VA. ATN, a good place to live. It was something that was done in 1910, and it's on the National Register of Historic Places, and we embrace who we are. We have brass markers that go down the middle of the street that say Tennessee, Virginia, because we want visitors to have a good experience and a good time when they're here.
This is a historic town, even from an architectural standpoint. You have a lot of cool old buildings downtown.
We do. We have a lot of unique architecture. We're really proud of our preservation. We've tried to preserve. We have lost a few structures to fires or things like that, but many, many, many years ago, it was all about preservation. So even though we're growing, we're renovating our old buildings that we do have. The Birthplace of Country Music Museum, for example, is in a historic building. We did not want to tear that down. We want to progress efficiently, but was also responsibly for our community.
One of the interesting anomalies, maybe I just haven't been down all the streets, but I have yet to see a national chain, you know, like a Starbucks or a McDonald's.
Well, you know, with Bristol also being along an interstate, we're along 81, a major interstate, a lot of our chains are along the interstate. And our city planners and our community pays a lot of attention to make sure that downtown is unique, it's authentic, so you won't see a lot of chains. We have a lot of the chain restaurants, just not in downtown. So our coffee shops downtown, like Bloom or Whimsical or Trailblazer, those are our coffee shops that are in the downtown district. And our shops and stores and fudge at Southern Churn, there's a lady that makes hundreds of pounds of fudge a week. So we want to embrace those restaurants and those stores. So if you come down here, you'll see that for yourself.
I've been here a few times going back maybe 10, 15 years. The sense I have come to understand more and more is that American roots music is intertwined historically with the survival and the Renaissance of Bristol.
I would agree. Our town has survived. It's ebbed and flowed over the years, but it has grown tremendously, and we've truly preserved and embraced our music heritage. Sometimes you forget where you're from. You know, we embrace that here. We embrace our roots music. We embrace our Americana and country and bluegrass, and we have different industries that spur up from that. We have a great music night scene, and we also have recording studios and that also brings in other things. You know, we have traditional manufacturing that has stayed in downtown, like L.C. King.
L.C. King manufactures work dungarees?
You're going to see what L.C. King. L.C. King is started with clothes that farmers, workers would use, and they also make lines of clothes that are still made to this day in the same factory that you'll see people like Tom Hanks wears. And they have lines of clothes that I would consider hip, that are now mainstream, and it's very well sought after, especially from overseas, ordered online for many countries overseas.
These are manufactured locally.
It's manufactured locally. Some of the people who have worked there and that have sewed have been doing that for 40, 50 years, and it's generations.
Yeah, miracles survive.
You know, to have an entity like that survive shows what Bristol and our community embraces, our stores, our restaurants, our manufacturing that are here, because I know a lot of people that go to L.C. King, for example, and you're going to get something, a Christmas gift. You're going to get a gift for someone. You're going to a jacket or jeans for yourself. And that's just something we do. We look home first, and we encourage people from out of town to explore this and see this for the first time, too.
Interesting backstory about Bristol. It reminds me of my time visiting Johnson City, Tennessee. That downtown was almost decimated, destroyed by the advent of the mall that sucked the life out of downtown. But Johnson City, like here, has by a miracle turned it around, and they're saving their historic downtown.
I think that's something that has spilled over to the cities that surround us. When you look at Johnson City or Kingsport, those cities that surround us, you know, we fell into that culture of the 80s, 90s where everything went to a mall. It really hurt downtowns. Apartment stores went away. A lot of your shopping went away. Your movie theaters went away. But places like Bristol, places like Johnson City, they have embraced and tried to restore their theaters. They've restored their buildings. And now you'll see coffee shops or performance theaters or breweries in some of those places, especially in downtown Johnson City. And they're our neighbors, and we're proud of them too. We're all proud of the Tri-Cities. We all live and work in each other's city. But it's great to see, theaters that are close to downtown Johnson City, and then we have down here in Bristol, Paramount, Cameo.
Classic architectural facades.
And some of those almost went away in the 90s. And some were closed for 20 years. But now they're hosting music and events two or three times a week, and they are just selling out.
Are they doing movies anymore, or is it all live?
They sometimes do movies, especially Paramount. They'll do some Christmas and some movies, which is so nostalgic. People really do love that because that's how the Paramount Theater started. But, you know, they do live music, ballet. There's a lot that do go through.
There, year-round, there's a vitality to the nightlife in Bristol.
Our downtown nightlife, there's live music almost every night, especially Tuesday through Saturday nights. A lot of our restaurants have put in small stages or outdoor stages. So you'll hear blues, you'll hear Americana, bluegrass, country. There's all kinds of music.
This is not once a year, this is once a week.
This is every week. So I know we have Bristol Rhythm and Roots, which is always in September and is always a big, huge weekend. But those stages are year-round. You'll see performances even after this weekend. They'll start gearing up next week.
That's really interesting. And again, your position here?
I'm executive director of Explore Bristol, the tourism office here, explorebristol.com. So we encourage you to come visit us. And you can explore more at explorebristol.com if you want to learn more about our community.
You have offices on both sides of the street?
No, not yet. We physically have one office, but we serve the area, so the region. So
you're not going to tell us which state you're in?
Well, we're working on a new office in Bristol, Tennessee. So that information will be released here soon, but I am currently in Bristol, Tennessee. But you know, that's one thing about Bristol. We'll probably have stuff in both places.
Everything's going to be virtual pretty soon anyway.
Yeah, it is.
You'll be working from home.
I might be on a laptop in the middle of State Street.
I love it. Okay. To learn more about your world,
I would go to explorebristol.com to learn more about us. And again, this is Matt Bolus with Explore Bristol, and I encourage you to come explore more.
Awesome. Thanks, Matt. And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from both sides of the street in Bristol. We'll see you here. Rock and roll.
My name is Joe Deal. Rock and roll, baby. It's all about the theater and about the music. And downtown Bristol is a birthplace country music. We love our music scene here, and We have a really nice theater right next door called the Cameo Theater.
Joe, you own pretty legendary, historic Burger Bar.
Yes, sir. It's been an honor to own the place. Bought it about 10 years ago, me and my wife. And we started out with me and her and one server. And we've worked our way up to have about 15 employees now. Now made it through COVID, and we're still kicking.
What I love about this place is basically on chain, out of the 50s.
Yeah, our thought when we purchased the place was we wanted to have our grandparents and great-grandparents come in and bring the grandkids and show them what it was like when they were a kid. So we've tried to keep it original, as nostalgic as possible, and just try to be wholesome.
When did it first open?
From what I've researched, 1942 was the inception, and it was actually called the Snack King before it was the Burger Bar. And I was lucky enough to talk to the gentleman's granddaughter who opened it. He got out of the war in 1941, came back to Bristol, and opened up the first Burger Bar.
Architecturally, from the street, how unchanged is it?
It's very original. The tile front pretty much gives you the feel of the 50s. I know the tile's been redone one time, but I'm pretty sure the layout is exactly the same as it was when it was first built.
Right now we're at the counter. We've got the classic Formica boomerang pattern.
Yeah, the inside has not changed much. It's the same layout as it was initially put in. It's a pie-shaped building. It's only 550 square feet. So it's not like there's a lot of square footage. They use the end of the block. That's why it hasn't changed much. There's not a whole lot you can really do with this.
Yeah, down at the end to your left, the corner, you're about 5 feet wide.
Yeah, the two bathrooms are at the very end, and this is way before handicap accessible was ever even heard of. And luckily, I have a bathroom on the other side, because these are not the friendliest bathrooms. I have to go sideways to get through the door.
The whole place, I mean, you got to look where you're going or you're going to wind up on your butt.
Yeah, it's very, very narrow, and they used what they had.
The steps coming up.
Yes, it's unchanged, and again, I think they used the materials that were local. And we try to keep it original. When we change something, we try to find period pieces to put back in place.
Even your cuisine, what you offer, you try to go back in time, find old original recipes.
We have. Our chili is original to downtown Bristol, to a pharmacy that was started in 1869. And everything we use, our flat top to the way we prepare the food, is close to the original as possible.
It's a part of the music history of America. There's a connection with Hank Williams and this Burger Bar.
Yes, there is the Hank story that comes along with the Burger Bar. When I bought it, I did a lot of research to try to find the actual story, so when customers come in, I could tell them as much as I knew is the truth. And I tell the story of how Hank Williams swung through here on his last notorious ride. It does. Bristol being the birthplace of country music, we do got a music history.
Well, the myth and legend is that this is the last place where anybody saw him alive.
Yes, sir, and there's no doubt to the truth to that. This is the last place that he was alive. He pronounced him dead about an hour and a half from here in Oak Hill, West Virginia. And a lot of people don't realize poor Hank was only 29 years old. At 29, he's been inducted and kicked out of the Grand Ole Opry. Wrote over 100 songs. He was an amazing man at his time.
That's really a trip. Okay, any secret you're holding about the Burger Bar?
Well, the only secret I would say is there is a door that no one really knows what. It's only 550 feet, square feet, and there's two front doors. And one of them is larger than the other, and it's a metal door. And I had an old-timer tell me that they did that for Jimmy Rodge to come in so he could sit in the side and the back by himself. And if that's a true story, that would be a very, very, very good story.
Yeah, you have to track that one down.
I'd love to. It's just hard to find anybody that was around then.
So you and your wife, it's a family-run business.
Yes, sir. Me, my wife, my daughter, my daughter's boyfriend, all my friends and family. Just about everyone at work here has a tie with my family.
That's really cool. And do you ever get in contact with the people that owned the Burger Bar before?
Yes, sir. It was handled by several people over the many years it's been open, and I have talked to a few of them and a few of the families that have owned it. It's always been a family operation.
Have they shared any cool stories?
Yes. It goes way back to the fast food. We had a story that this place used to claim a burger called the Whopper, which we know actually belongs to someone else. They were told that they had to change the name or or they'd be a lawsuit against them. So there's a lot of history that comes in here.
Okay, to learn more about your world, do you guys have a website, or how would somebody learn more about you?
Yes, sir. We're the Original Burger Bar. We have a website. We have a Facebook page. And we do try to keep everything posted as we do new things. We run a lot of specials. Most of our burgers are named after Hank Williams songs. But on top of that, I let my guys be creative, and we have a macaroni and cheese burger. We do an Oh My Cheese with two grilled cheeses and a hamburger in the middle. Our goal is good food, hot food, and no one goes away hungry. And my name is Joe Deal, and my wife is Kayla, daughter Emily, and we're just a good old family friendly restaurant, and we love to have people stop in and say they heard us on NPR or where they heard the story from. And
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from
Bristol, Virginia.
I love it because it's also Bristol, Tennessee.
Yes, it is.
Right across the street.
Very unique situation with a state line that runs right down the middle of our downtown.
Thanks again, Joe.
Yes, sir.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website foundation@hearstcastle.com to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.
God's own treasury to feed yourself in pride. You must unload. The way is straight and narrow, and but few are in the road. My brother and my sister, is but no other mode. If you want to get to heaven, your future abode, you must unload. Pay your share, you must unload. You want to get to heaven on the cheapest kind of fare, you must unload. The way is straight and narrow, and but few are in the road. My brother and my sister, there is no other mode. If you want to get
it to heaven, your future amour. You must unload. You puffer of the cigarette, you made your fate secure. You must unload, you must unload. There'll be no more tobacco in the land where all is pure. You must unload. The way is straight and narrow, and but few are in the road. My brother and my sister, there is no other mode. If you want to get to heaven, your future abode, you must unload. Parties, you are far from being true. You must unload, there'll be no playing euchre in the land where all is true. You must unload. The way is straight and narrow, and but few are in the road. My brother and my sister, there is no other mode. If you want to get to heaven, your future.